And this time, there was no sorrow, no August, nothing to distract her, and she was already on her feet, heading for the door, the stairs, the way down, out. The need burned through her veins like fever, and even without the voiceless presence in her skull pushing her on, she knew that Alice was her making, her monster. And it was her job to kill it, before it killed anyone else. It turned out Henry didn't want August to scrub in. He wanted him to play. "To the wounded," he explained, gesturing at the infirmary and the FTFs who'd been caught in the power station blasts. 2 dozen men and women laid out on cots. The compound was running low on sedatives. Injuries had grown fairly rare in the FTF. When it came to missions, most either got out in one piece or didn't get out at all.
"The room isn't soundproofed," said August.
"Then play softly," countered his father.
"It's worth some dazed bystanders, if it helps with their pain."
August fetched his violin. Henry stepped outside, and August closed the door behind him and drew up a chair, bow hesitating over the strings. He thought of the soldier in the cell, sorrow snapping the man's neck, Leo saying it was a waste. But he also thought of the relief washing over the soldier, the struggle going out of his limbs.
"Maybe there is more to us than murder."
He started to play, softly, and within seconds the muffled sounds of pain fell away. The tension in the patient's limbs slackened, their breathing eased, and their souls began to surface, filling the infirmary with pale but steady light. August exhaled, his own body loosening with the music. And for the first time in 4 years, the song itself felt like a kind of nourishment, filling him like light, like life, like a soul. And tablets began to chime. They went off at once, all over the compound, and August faltered, losing the melody. A broadcast? Across the entire task force? He set the instrument aside, drawing his own device from his pocket. He read the message once, then again and again. And then he was on his feet, the violin abandoned as he ran. The doors banged open, revealing an empty roof, an open sky, and no Kate. August backtracked to the apartment, trying to stay calm, telling himself she wouldn't do this, wouldn't walk straight into a trap, not alone, that Kate was smarter than that. But he also heard the words she'd whispered into his collar, and saw the silver dancing in her eyes, a demon twisting her thoughts toward violence. Harris and Ani were playing cards on the couch, Allegro between them. Ani looked up.
"I didn't know you had a cat."
Jackson was making coffee, his tablet in his hand.
"Hey, August, any idea what this means?"
He didn't answer. The bedroom was empty. The bathroom was empty. Harris was on his feet now.
"What's going on?"
"I'll kill her myself." He should never have left her alone. "It's Kate, isn't it?" said Ani, shoving on her boots. "I can tell by your face." Jackson blocked his path, coffee in hand. August was taller, but Jackson was broader by far.
"Get out of my way," ordered August. "Where are we going, Captain?"
"You aren't going anywhere," said August.
Ani tisked. "No solo missions."
"I'd never ask."
"You don't have to,"
said Harris, zipping up his vest.
"You go, we go."
August shook his head.
"You don't even care about her."
"No," said Ani, holstering a blade. "But you do, and that's a first." Jackson downed the last of his coffee.
"Where's she headed?"
"The tower," said August.
"Odds of catching her before she hits the seam?"
"Depends if she's on foot."
Ani was on the comm.
"Alpha squad here, we need a jeep."
Just like that, they'd fallen into form, as if this were any other mission.
"Thank you."
"Don't thank us, boss. Not until we bring her back."
Kate was many things, but she wasn't stupid. She knew it was a trap. Of course she did. But the way she saw it, either Alice would be waiting for her or Sloane would, and either way, she had a debt to pay. She didn't look back, couldn't afford to second guess. The seam rose ahead of her, and the line of light that traced its spine must have been on a different transformer because it was still up, soldiers pacing on top. Kate secured her helmet and started up the ladder, reminding herself over and over that she was one of them. Or rather, still suited up from the attack at the power station, she looked like one of them. She crested the edge and stepped onto the seam spine, thankful she'd never been afraid of heights. North City sprawled out below her. From this position, she could see down the main thoroughfare, straight to Harker Hall.
"What are you doing here?"
demanded an FTF with the bearing of a squad leader. Kate didn't hesitate. Pauses give a lie away. "Here to relieve someone, sir." The soldier held out a hand as if to shake, but when Kate took it, he pulled her close.
"Relief units arrived 10 minutes ago,"
he said, squeezing her fingers. "Try again." Kate let out an exasperated breath. She really didn't have time for this. One hand still pinned in the FTF's grip, she drew her gun with the other, leveling it at his chest. "I'm going over this wall," she said quietly. "One way or another." The dark sang through her, the weight of the steel in her hand, the shock on his face, the dizzying relief of being in control. It would be so easy. But she kept the safety on and her finger away from the trigger, and the sight of the weapon, or maybe her willingness to use it, was enough to make the man let go. Kate took a step toward the nearest ladder.
"I'll call it in," he said, "the second you're gone."
"Go ahead," said Kate, swinging her leg over the lip. If August didn't know, he would soon. The Jeep was waiting at the edge of the light strip, and so was Sorrow. The Sunai stood between August and the idling vehicle. Sometimes when Leo had been in a righteous mood, the energy had practically wicked off him, like heat. Ilsa, too, seemed to create her own cloud whenever her thoughts began to spiral, and she had told August more than once that, when he was sad, she could feel it in the air around him, like a cold front. If it was true that a Sunai could alter the space around them, then the air around Sorrow was a storm. August signaled for his squad to stay put and started forward across the grid.
"You're going after her," said Sorrow. It wasn't a question.
"I am."
Sorrow didn't move, and August had to. Kate was getting farther away by the second.
"If you intend to stop me?"
Sorrow's gray eyes hardened. "You would risk these lives and yours for a sinner."
"No,"
said August.
"I would risk them for a friend."
The Sunai let out a low breath and marched toward him, and August braced himself for a fight. But it didn't come. Sorrow just kept walking, back toward the compound.
"You should go, then," they said. "Before it's too late."
Chapter 7 The Jeep skidded to a stop at the base of the seam. Word had come over the comms a minute before. A young female soldier had forced her way through at gunpoint. Jackson flashed the high beams, but the gate didn't open, and August and Harris climbed out as an FTF started toward them.
"We're on lockdown, sir. No one crosses. But you've already let someone through. She pulled a gun.
Is that all it takes?"
asked Harris, freeing his sidearm. August caught his wrist. Somewhere nearby, tires skidded over asphalt. Another vehicle was headed their way.
"We need to get through," he said to the soldier. "Now."
The FTF shook his head.
"I'm under strict orders, and I'm August Flynn." "With respect,"
he said.
"My orders come from the top."
Lights flared against the side of the seam as the second Jeep swung to a stop, and Henry got out. Had Sorrow told him, or had he seen the message for himself?
"Henry, I have to..."
"Sir,"
said the soldier at the same time.
"I was just..."
"Open the gate,"
ordered Henry. This time, the soldier didn't hesitate. He radioed the order, and the gate began to grind open. August turned toward his father.
"You're letting us go?"
"No,"
said Henry, moving toward August's Jeep.
"I'm coming with you."
No offense, sir," said Harris,
"but I don't think that's a good idea."
Henry laughed softly as he opened the door,
Well, then it's a good thing I outrank you.
We can handle it from here, insisted Ani. But August only stared at his father, his sickly pallor, his too thin form. It made no sense. Henry was in no shape to fight.
Why?
Henry put a hand on his shoulder.
I am a man, not a movement,
he said.
But if a movement is what it takes to end this war, then I will play my part. Now,
his hand tightened and then was gone.
Let's go find Miss Harker.
North City had gotten darker. That was Kate's first thought as she moved through the streets, HUV in one hand and gun in the other. The Corsi murmured from the shadows, flashing teeth and claws.
Harker, Harker, it's a Harker.
Her FTF gear was traced with metal, but there was a difference between deterring monsters and stopping them, and she tried to stay in the light, what little there was. Her father's tower rose ahead of her, or rather, a hulking shadow loomed in its place. Kate's step slowed. She stopped beneath a single low-wattage streetlight, its flickering bulb the only thing standing between her and a blackout zone. It carved a lightless circle around the base of Harker Hall, a dark inversion of the moat that surrounded the compound. It felt like a physical thing, that darkness. Something more than air and night. A wall of black. And, embedded in that wall, a pair of red eyes. The Malkai stepped out of the shadows, and Kate saw not her own shadow, but her father's. Sloane. She'd seen him in dreams, in memories, but they paled compared to the truth. In her visions, he'd been reduced to a shape in a dark suit, reduced to fangs and blood and malice. But now he stood before her, gray flesh pulled tight over blackened bones, fingers ending in silver points. Fear slammed through Kate's chest, and Sloane smiled as if he could hear the traitorous thing raging in her pulse. When he spoke, his voice grazed her skin like a knife, metal across skin.
Catherine.
The sound of her name on his lips, sweet and taunting. Sloane, she said, fighting to keep her tone dry. What a surprise. He spread his hands.
You didn't think I'd let Alice keep you to herself. Not when we have such history.
Her fingers tightened on the gun. The night rustled around her, dotted with red as shadows emerged from the darkness. Malkai. Not one or two, but a half dozen forming a loose circle around them.
Not exactly a fair fight.
Sloane clicked his tongue.
What place does fair have in a world like ours? Fair is a white flag, a word for cowards.
He gestured to her clothing.
You've traded sides. Your father would be disappointed.
My father is dead. She kept her head high. She wanted to look Sloane in the eyes when she killed him. Slid the knife under his skin and up into his heart, savoring the delicious warmth. The Chaos Eater whispered through her, hungry for Sloane's blood. Her fear replaced by hatred, cold and steady. But she held the monster at bay. Not yet. Not yet. There would be no going back. She would let it out, if she had to. When she had to. But it would be on her terms.
You've changed,
observed Sloane. His lips parted, revealing pointed teeth.
But I can still taste your...
Down, dog, she snarled, firing the gun. But Sloane moved like light, like smoke, like nothing. And by the time the shot rang out, he was behind her, an arm around her shoulders as he pulled her back against him. His breath was ice against her neck.
I've waited for this.
Keep waiting, she growled, slamming her elbow back and up into the side of his head. Sloane was fast, but Kate had learned to fight dirty. He fell back a single step, but it was enough for her to get free and put 2 paces, 3, between them. Sloane laughed. A horrible sound, too high.
You are even more stubborn than I remember.
The other Maokai shifted and stirred, bloodlust heavy in the air, but Sloane had obviously told them this was his kill. How long would they listen? Her father had tried to keep the Maokai on a leash. It hadn't gone well. Kate drew a knife as Sloane came at her again. She slashed, expecting him to retreat or at least to dodge. He didn't. Instead, the Maokai shifted the slightest step left and let the knife plunge right into his arm as he continued forward, closing the distance between them. Black blood welled up, staining the sleeve of Sloane's suit, but neither surprise nor pain registered on his face. Kate didn't even have time to draw the blade back, to retreat. He was inside her guard. His hand closed around her neck, his shoe caught her heel, and for a terrible second, when she hit the pavement, they were back in the gravel outside the house in the waste, Sloane pressing her body down into broken rock, fingers tight around her throat. She forced her mind back to the present. Sloane was on top of her, the hilt of the knife pinned between them so she couldn't free the blade. The gun was still in her other hand, but when she tried to bring it up, his fingers closed around it, forcing her wrist against the pavement. He bore down on her. He didn't smell like death. He never had. No, he smelled like violence, like leather and blood and pain. His sharpened teeth flashed as he sank them into her arm, and a scream tore from Kate's throat. The darkness began to fold around her mind, the monster rising, but Sloane drew back sharply. His mouth was painted with her blood, but he wasn't smiling. His hand raked through her hair, forcing her head back. Not to bare her throat, she realized, but to see her eyes. A snarl of anger escaped his lips.
What have you done?
He demanded, right before a pair of high beams sliced through the dark. Sloane was halfway to his feet when a gunshot tore the air and a shatter shell hit him in the chest. The jeep screeched to a halt, Harris and his gun still hanging out the window. Sloane staggered backward, and the other monster surged through the dark in a frenzy of nails and teeth. August was already out of the jeep, drawing a knife, as Harris lunged into the fray. Ani detonated a series of light grenades, a blinding strobe effect that left the Maokai dazed and gave Jackson and Henry time to get to Kate, who was already up. Blood dripped from her fingers, but she had a gore-slick knife in one hand and a gun in the other. Sloane, too, was on his feet. The shell had hit him in the chest, tearing through suit and skin, but it clearly hadn't reached his heart. His red eyes found August, and August lunged toward him, only to be cut off by 2 other Maokai. He didn't stop. He slit one's throat and drove the blade up under the other's ribs, Leo's voice weaving through his head.
This is your purpose, and doesn't it feel good?
He twisted, searching for Sloane, as Harris let out a strangled cry. A Maokai had its fangs in his shoulder, but then Ani was there, driving a knife through its neck. It went down, and Harris yowled and stomped on the Maokai's chest until it cracked, splintered, gave.
I think it's dead, called Jackson, wiping a streak of gore from his cheek. They're all dead.
August turned, searching. Kate clutched her arm as Ani put pressure on Harris's shoulder, and August realized with a sick dread that none of the bodies on the ground belonged to Sloane. The Maokai was gone, and so was Henry Flynn. Chapter 8 Gone. What do you mean, gone? Emily Flynn was not a shouter. The few times August had seen her angry, truly angry, her voice lost all its volume, all its warmth. She went cold and quiet. The rest of the FTF Council wasn't nearly as composed, their questions ricocheting through the command center. Ilsa stood in the doorway, a faraway look in her eyes, and August wished she still had her voice, even though he knew that if she tried to speak right now, what came out would be only wondering, wandering, lost. Sorrow had their voice, but they stood silently against the wall, their expression level in every way but one, their eyes.
Sorrow's eyes, the color of stone, asked a silent question. Was she worth it? Emily held up a hand, calling for silence as she leaned across the table and met August's gaze. Explain it to me. He opened his mouth, but it was Kate who spoke. She pulled free of the medic, bandaging her arm. It's my fault.
I believe you, said Em, but that doesn't answer my question.
He insisted, said August.
I'm going with you.
Markhan shook his head.
Why would he do that?
Why would you let him? Added Emily, her attention still on August. Why had he? Because Henry Flynn was in charge of the FTF? Because he believed in something greater than himself? Because August believed he had a plan?
Because he's dying.
August heard the words come out of his mouth. The room went quiet. Emily's face darkened. Henry had never said the words, not to August, and August had never asked. He hadn't needed to, hadn't wanted to, not in the months of watching Henry grow thin, of listening to his cough, and not in the moments after they crossed the seam. There was a strange place between knowing and not knowing. A place where things could live in the back of your head without weighing down your heart.
That doesn't explain, started Paris.
Doesn't it? Challenged Kate. Maybe he wanted his death to mean something.
You have no right to talk, said Markhan.
If you hadn't gone, added Shia, Henry wouldn't... If I hadn't gone, said Kate, Henry Flynn would have found another excuse to get himself killed. The air grew brittle, and August felt Ilsa and Sorrow stiffen.
We don't know that he's dead, said Emily, tightly.
What do we tell the task force?
Asked Markhan.
We can't tell them, argued Shia.
You have to, said Kate and Bennett at the same time. Emily straightened.
Henry would want them to know.
Ilsa tapped on the doorframe. August and Sorrow glanced toward her. No one else seemed to hear. He watched as his sister produced a tablet, fingers dancing on the screen.
The last thing we need, said Markhan, is an uprising.
Actually, said Paris, I think that's exactly what we need.
Ilsa's fingers gave a flourish, and every screen in the room burst to life, showing feeds, not of the city outside, but of the compound itself. The training hall turned barracks, the lobby, the canteen, room after room filled with people, all of them talking. Sound spilled into the room, a cacophony of voices as cadets and captains, soldiers and night squads spoke up and over and around one another.
They've got Commander Flynn.
We can't just sit here. We should be out there.
What are we waiting for?
Well, said Kate, it looks like they already know.
August remembered Henry's last words.
He's a man, not a movement,
he said, echoing his father.
But if a movement is what it takes to end this war...
Emily met his gaze across the table.
If Henry is alive, she said slowly, then we will fight to get him back.
Markhan crossed his arms.
And what if he's not?
Sloane pried the shards of metal from his skin with a pair of tweezers, dropping the slivers into the dish one by one, each coated in viscous black blood. His suit was ruined, his shirt cast aside, his bare chest a mess of torn flesh. The shards were silver, and his skin sizzled as he dug them out, but the sensation was shallow and fleeting, and it was not so very different from pleasure. He told himself to relish it, though his hand trembled as he worked. The two engineers lay slumped against the table, their throats torn open. He hadn't had time to savor the kills, but the meal had helped with the wound, helped rinse away the rancid taste of Kate's blood in his mouth. Across the room, Flynn's head lolled forward, a thin ribbon of blood tracing a line from the man's temple to his chin before dripping to the floor. Sloane had always imagined Henry Flynn as the flip side of a coin, Callum Harker's equal but opposite force. He was wrong. Up close, Flynn was nothing but a too thin human with graying temples and sallow skin. He smelled sickly. So disappointing. Still, Sloane couldn't help but marvel at the fortune of it, having the head of the FTF dropped in his lap. He'd lost Catherine and gained an idol, even if it was a false one. Sloane straightened, wiping the last of the blood from his shoulder. "Why isn't he dead?" asked Alice, storming in. "And what happened to you?" Her gaze flicked to the engineers. "You didn't save me any." Sloane slid on a fresh black shirt.
"You're supposed to be watching our pet."
"Where is Kate?" she demanded. "You promised."
"Catherine will return to us," said Sloane. "And when she does," he added, "you can have her."
Alice beamed at that.
"Did you evacuate the Malkai?" asked Sloane.
"Most of them," she said, hopping onto the counter. She looked down at the bowl of shrapnel and crinkled her nose. "There's a few in the lobby, but they were sound asleep. I didn't want to wake them." Her attention flicked to Flynn. "Speaking of..."
Sloane turned in time to see Flynn's eyelids flutter open. He tried to move, but Sloane had bound him to the chair with wire, and he watched as Flynn struggled, winced, and then went still, realizing where he was.
"I have to admit," said Sloane, buttoning his shirt, "I expected more."
Flynn coughed, a deep rattle in his chest.
"Sorry to disappoint." "You didn't put up much of a fight," he mused. "One might almost think you wanted to end up in this position. Hoping to rally the troops?"
The man looked up at that, and Sloane saw that he was right.
"That was quite a gamble, Mr. Flynn."
"Unlike you,"
he said, a hitch in his voice.
"I care about more than my own life. The task force will finally bring the fight here to me, to you."
Sloane reached out and spun Flynn's chair toward the windows. They were still 2 hours from dawn, and the night was at its thickest. He pointed toward the beacon of light that was the FTF compound and lowered his head to whisper in the man's ear.
"That," he said, "is exactly what I'm counting on."
Flynn tensed. Alice, now cross-legged on the counter, only chuckled.
"Time to lay out the cards and see who has the better hand."
Flynn shook his head.
"Kate knew you'd see it as a game."
Alice's eyes brightened at the mention of her maker, but Sloane held up a hand.
"Do you believe in fate?" "Callum did not. Neither do I. And yet, here you are."
Alice began toying with a circle of metal. It was a collar, the kind worn by the fangs. Sloane plucked it from her hands.
"Make yourself useful,"
he told her, flicking his fingers toward a camera on a stand. Alice sighed and hopped off the counter. Sloane returned to Flynn's side and fastened the collar around the man's throat, relishing the visible shiver that ran through Flynn at the metal's touch. Sloane swung the chair back around and considered his work. Something was missing. He took up a roll of tape.
"When I first met Leo, he asked me if I believed in God."
The tape made a ripping sound as he pulled a length free.
"I think he expected me to say no. But if we are not proof of a higher power, what is?"
He tore the strip with his teeth.
"I like to think that we are simply what you humans have sowed and reaped. You have earned us. Leo and I saw eye to eye on that."
Flynn's gaze hardened.
"He drove a metal bar into your back.
Sloane flicked his hand dismissively.
I would have done the same to him. Monstrous acts I can respect. Besides, he did miss.
Flynn looked at him with fire in his eyes. So there was still a spark left.
If you're going to kill me...
Oh, I don't plan on doing that. Much as I would enjoy it.
Sloane leaned in.
Dead, you are a martyr.
He pressed the tape over Flynn's mouth.
Alive? You're simply bait.
They were all idiots, thought Kate. Henry Flynn had handed the FTF a cause, a reason to fight. And the council couldn't get out of their own damn way. It doesn't matter if he's alive, she said. A remark that earned her August's wide eyes and Sorrow's cold glare and a whole lot of judgment from the rest of the room. She pressed on. You've always been divided into North and South, us and them. You keep talking about safety, about defense. But these people, your soldiers, they want to fight. And now they have something, someone to fight for. So for God's sake, don't waste it. Just then, the screens throughout the room crackled and went dark. Everyone looked to Ilsa, but Ilsa was staring at her own tablet in a way that made it clear this wasn't her doing. The signal came back up, but instead of broadcasting from the various compound rooms, every single screen showed the same image. Henry Flynn. Bloody, half-conscious, but alive. There was no sound on the feed, and even if there had been, his mouth was taped shut. Some kind of steel contraption around his neck. It took her a second to process the wires, the small timer ticking down. 59 minutes, 57 seconds. 59 minutes, 56 seconds. 59 minutes, 55 seconds. 59 minutes, 54 seconds. And just like that, the room burst into motion. Chairs pushed back and people rose. The signal was being broadcast across the entire feed to every screen and every tablet, not just in the command center, but across the whole compound. It was a gift, a point of no return. The FTFs, already gunning for their fight, had just been given their target, the tower. And even if the council members wanted to argue, they'd never be able to stop the soldiers now. 59 minutes, 42 seconds. 59 minutes, 41 seconds. 59 minutes, 40 seconds. Ilsa spread her hands across the largest screen, fingers splayed over Henry Flynn's gray face, while August and Emily and Sorrow spoke into their comms, relaying orders through the ranks.
Assemble squads 1 through 36. Authorizing arms clearance. Lockdown procedure.
Kate was still staring at the feed, not at Flynn, but at the room around him. She recognized the floor-to-ceiling windows at his back, the chair he was tied to, the steel and glass and wood, all those cold surfaces and sharp edges that marked her father's taste. The penthouse. 58 minutes, 28 seconds. 58 minutes, 27 seconds. 58 minutes, 26 seconds.
I know exactly where he is.
Chapter 9. For 6 months, August had watched the FTF slowly break apart. Now, in a single breath, it came together. It was like a symphony, he thought. Every instrument in tune. Team after team of FTF cadets fell into rank across the compound, tasked with guarding the structure and the 10,000 civilians now sheltering inside while the night squads prepared to take the tower. He spotted Colin among them. The boy offered August a smile and a small salute as he passed, violin in hand. Kate walked at August's side, her gaze steady, her face blank. He'd grown used to seeing her shifting expressions, her varying moods, and it was unnerving to remember how good she was at hiding them. Could he have convinced her to stay behind? No. This was her fight as much as his, perhaps even more. He was almost to the doors when Ilsa caught his wrist and pulled him back.
What is it?
he asked, and she threw her arms around his neck, her grip so strong it startled him.
Don't go,
her arms seemed to say. Or maybe simply, come back. And he wondered if she'd known all along that this was where they were headed. If this was what she'd seen in the city she'd made on the kitchen counter, the one reduced to grains of sugar that tasted like ash. August pulled away, or Ilsa pushed him, he wasn't sure, only knew that the weight of her arms was gone. The heart of the night squads had assembled on the light grid, more than 300 soldiers armed and ready for war, and August swung the violin case onto his shoulder as they made their way to the jeep at the front of the convoy. Harris, Jackson, and Ani were already inside. M was at the wheel. A bandage dotted with blood shone beneath Harris's collar, but he was wide-eyed and gunning for a fight. He made room, and August was halfway into the jeep when Sorrow strode over from another vehicle and held out a bag. Not to him, but to Kate. When she hesitated, clearly suspicious, Sorrow dropped the bag at her feet and walked back toward their own squad. It landed with a metallic clang, and Kate knelt and retrieved a pair of iron spikes.
You shouldn't have, she called after the Sunai before stepping up into the jeep.
August laid the violin across his lap, and Kate sat beside him, turning a spike between her fingers. And as the jeep pulled out, he glanced back at the compound and saw his sister standing at the front doors, one hand pressed against the glass. But he was too far away to read her face. Sloane approached the gold shroud. The shadow in the cage was growing restless. Its silence had changed from a hand to a fist, from a fist to a leaden weight. Its displeasure like a cold snap in the basement.
Chaos, 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 whispered the Corsi from their corners.
The truck idled nearby. A Maokai opened the back and lowered a ramp, and Sloane watched as four more took up wooden poles and slipped them beneath the covered cage and lifted. The monster inside weighed nothing, but the cage was steel, and the Maokai struggled under its weight.
Mind the gold, advised Sloane, adjusting his gloves.
The sheet shifted, nearly brushing a Maokai's skin, and he snarled, almost dropping his end. But Sloane was there to catch it. He would have torn out the monster's throat, but they were on a schedule. At last, the cage was loaded onto the truck, and Sloane stepped up beside it, the closeness of the gold a pain he tried to savor. He could feel the shadow beneath the shroud, like an ache in his teeth, a thirst in his throat, and knew that it was hungry.
Soon, my pet.
39 minutes, 8 seconds. 39 minutes, 7 seconds. 39 minutes, 6 seconds. The convoy tore through the night, Emily Flynn's voice carrying in the car and across the comms at the same time. Every squad has been assigned a floor to clear. You will move systematically through the tower. Maokai are to be eliminated on sight. Fangs are to be incapacitated. As you've been informed, there is another kind of monster somewhere in the building, one with the ability to alter minds. If you encounter it, you are to close your eyes. If any members of your team are affected, you are to incapacitate them. They reached the seam. The gates were open. They didn't stop. Time ticked away inside Kate's head as the jeep barreled toward the wall of darkness at the tower's base. Her arm throbbed from the jagged wound Sloane's teeth had made earlier that night, but she held on to the pain like a tether, the blood seeping through the bandage a reminder that she was still human. The jeeps hit the blackout zone and plunged in, their high beams scattering the creatures in the dark. August leaned over and spoke into her good ear.
What's wrong?
Nothing. Something. Everything. She wasn't sure. She had been. Until she'd seen Henry Flynn on that feed, bound up like a prize, like a present. It was too simple, too obvious, too easy. Was it a taunt? Was it a trap? What was waiting for them in that tower? Sloane? Alice? The Chaos Eater? Were they all playing by Sloane's rules? Did they have a choice? She was missing something,
They were all missing something, and it was right there, just out of focus. A glance out of sight.
Kate,
pressed August. What if we're wrong? She murmured softly, so that only he could hear. What if this is a mistake?
August's brow furrowed. This is what Henry wanted, he said. What we needed. A reason to attack.
And he was right. Everything was going exactly to plan. And that was exactly why she didn't trust it. The jeeps came to a stop at the base of the tower. August strained to hear as they cut the engines, but there were too many soldiers, too much static. They kept the lights up, blocking out the darkness, and the Corsi shifting hungrily within it. Claws scraped against the sides of the jeeps wherever the light failed to reach, a high-pitched whine of nails on metal. The night squads gathered at the base of the stairs. Most had guns, but Kate gripped an iron spike. August had his bow out like a sword, and Sorrow held their flute knife in a fighter's grip. They climbed the tower steps as if every one of the six stairs might be rigged. But nothing happened. No wires tripped. No sudden blasts. August and Sorrow took the lead, stopping before the tower doors. The space beyond was dark, and August spread his hand against the glass, listening for the tick of a bomb, the rattle and hiss of Corsi waiting to be unleashed. But all he heard were the racing hearts of the FTF at his back, and a soft, almost imperceptible breathing somewhere inside. He nodded at Sorrow. And together they threw open the tower doors. Light grenades rolled across the lobby floor. The bounce of metal on stone followed a second later by waves of glaring white as the FTF poured in, their weapons raised. A dozen Maokai sprang up, hissing in surprise before lunging at the nearest soldiers, their teeth bared. August turned and slashed a monster's throat as Kate drove her spike through another's chest, and Harris made a triumphant sound as he cut down a third. Sorrow dispatched two more, clearing a path, and they sprinted across the lobby to the bank of elevators on the other side. Emily got there first, calling the car as the rest reached the doors and spun back to face whatever was coming for them. But nothing came. The dozen Maokai were dead, and the other night squads were already peeling off, heading for the other floors.
Too easy,
thought August, as the doors slid open behind them. Too easy, whispered Kate as they stepped inside. She punched the button for the penthouse with the familiarity of someone returning home. She seemed to realize it, too, her hand hovering in the air. Don't jinx us, warned Ani as the elevator rose.
Yeah,
said Jackson.
We can fall to our death at any second.
They all went quiet then. The only sounds in the steel box, their heartbeats, and the almost inaudible murmur of Emily marking time. August had never been afraid of dying, for all he thought about it. It bothered him, of course, the idea of being unmade, but his own death was a concept he couldn't grasp, no matter how hard he tried. But loss? That was a thing that scared him. The loss of those he cared for. The loss of himself. The absence left by both. Leo would have scorned such a thing. Sara wouldn't understand the point, and Ilsa was never one to dwell on the inevitable. But to August, that fear was the shadow in his life, the monster he could fight but never kill. The reason he had wanted so badly not to feel. And as he stood there, surrounded by his family, his team, his friends, the fear took hold. Because Ilsa was alone and Henry was dying, and so much of what he loved could fit within a metal box. And it could all be lost. Kate gave his hand a single squeeze before the elevator stopped, and the doors slid open. Chapter 10 The penthouse stretched before them, quiet and dark. And the first thing August heard was the sound of stifled breath. He barreled forward without thinking, down the hall and into the living room. And there he was, Henry, bound to the chair, dazed and pale, but alive. The red numbers flashed on the collar at his throat. 24 minutes, 52 seconds. 24 minutes, 51 seconds.
24 minutes, 50 seconds.
Ani,
ordered Emily, but the tech was already there at Henry's side, and Jackson, too, checking his vitals as Harris and Sorrow moved through the apartment. Em knelt before her husband.
I'm here, she said.
We're here. You're an absolute fool, and I'm going to kill you after we save you, but we're here.
Henry tried to speak, but his mouth was taped shut, and when Em reached to pull the tape free, Ani stopped her.
Don't touch anything, she warned. Not until I defuse this.
Henry's head lolled forward as the comm crackled at August's collar.
Second floor, we've got nothing.
There are two dead bodies over here, said Kate. Both human.
Harris reappeared.
Rooms are clear.
There's no one else here, said Sorrow.
It didn't make sense.
Third floor, empty,
said another voice on the comm. August looked around. Where were the Maokai? Where were the Fangs? Where were all the monsters?
He saw the same question written on Kate's face as she drew a tablet out from beneath one of the corpses.
This doesn't make any sense, said Ani, tugging at the device.
Wait, started Em, but Ani was already pulling the collar away from Henry's throat, prying the pieces apart with a force that no one should use when handling a live bomb. But then August realized it wasn't live. It wasn't a bomb at all. Just a collar, like the ones worn by the Fangs, with a few added pieces of colored wire, a timer.
What the hell? Said Harris.
Fourth floor, nothing here.
With the collar free, Ani eased the tape from Henry's mouth. He was hoarse, his breath rasping, but his words echoed through the penthouse.
It's a trap.
Everyone stiffened as the reports continued on the comms.
Fifth floor, we haven't found a thing.
If it's a trap, said Em,
then why haven't we been attacked?
Because, said Kate, holding up the tablet, we're not the target.
Through a streak of blood on the screen, August saw a map of the city, a too familiar building drawn over a grid, the compound. Kate was already moving back toward the elevator.
We need to go, now.
Sorrow issued a string of orders on their comm as Jackson and Ani got Henry on his feet, his legs nearly buckled, the air wheezing in his chest. His skin was gray.
Stay with me, said Em.
Kate called the elevator, and August thought of Ilsa standing at the compound doors, of Colin in the lobby, of 10,000 innocent people crammed into a building meant for 1,500. The elevator chimed, but when the doors opened, it wasn't empty. Alice stood in the pool of light.
Going somewhere?
The truck jerked and jarred over the uneven ground as it barreled through the tunnels beneath the city, its twin beams of light carving a path through the solid black. Beyond the vehicle, the Corsi hissed, but Sloane would make it up to them. After all, there would be plenty of corpses soon. At last, the hole came into sight. Alice had done her job well. A large crater had been opened between the new tunnel and the old. The debris cleared away to make a kind of road. The truck crawled through and emerged into an abandoned subway station. A broad set of stairs had once dead-ended in a section of ceiling where the subway had been closed up, built over, but a blast had opened that too. The Maokai unloaded the cage from the truck as Sloane made his way up the stairs and stepped into the space above. He spread his arms in triumph. He was standing inside the compound. It was a simple concrete hall. S3 stenciled on the walls, a set of open steel doors leading onto cell-like rooms. They would be perfect, he thought, for the Sunai. Sorrow in this one and August in that. It would be simple enough, starving them until they went dark. The Maokai hoisted the shrouded cage into the hall and Sloane's gloved hands came to rest above the golden sheet. His skin prickled with pain, but also delicious anticipation. It was like the moment before a hunt, those precious seconds after his prey had been released, when he let the tension build inside him, let his senses heighten, until everything went sharp, went clear.
Can you feel them up above? He murmured. They are my offering to you.
Sloane wrapped his fingers in the gold sheet, savoring the scorching heat as he pulled it free. He imagined himself a magician performing a trick. Only instead of hoping to render the cage empty, he hoped it was still full. And it was. Silver eyes hung in a cloud of shadow, meeting his gaze just before a siren began to blare. Sloane looked up and saw the single red eye of a security camera and smiled, because the alarms were far, far too late. The cage was empty. The shadow was gone. The power around him flickered, dimmed, and seconds later, from somewhere above, Sloane was rewarded by the sound of screams. Chapter 11. It finds death waiting in 10,000 beating hearts, 10,000 restless bodies tuned like instruments, ready to be played. And together they will make such wonderful music. Chapter 12. Alice stepped out of the elevator. Kate's stomach turned at the sight of her. The Malkai was dressed in Kate's old clothes, the sleeves stained with dried blood. She'd even pulled her white hair back into a ponytail, her red eyes glowing beneath pale bangs. August was already raising his violin, and Sorrow's flute was halfway to their mouth, but before either of them could play, Alice opened her hand, revealing a detonator. "Uh-uh," she said. "You may be fast, but I'll be faster." Sorrow glared, and August clenched his teeth as he lowered the instrument a fraction. It could be a bluff, thought Kate, but the gleam in Alice's red eyes said it wasn't.
"Leaving so soon? You just got here."
The words could have been meant for everyone, but Kate knew they were directed at her. And she understood. This wasn't about North and South or the war between Sloane and Flynn. This was between them.
"Alice," started August, but Kate cut him off.
"If I stay," she asked the Malkai, "will you let them go?" Alice's smile widened.
"I won't even try to stop them."
She stepped to the side and gestured toward the elevator.
"Freedom. All yours, for the low, low price of a single sinner."
"No,"
snarled August, but Kate kept her eyes on Alice. "I've got this," she said. "Take Henry and get back to the compound. They need you."
"We go together."
She glanced his way and saw pain in his eyes and fear, and it gave her hope that he hadn't given up, that he was still in there. "August," she said, "people are going to die if you don't leave."
"Oh," said Alice cheerfully, "I imagine they're already dying."
As if on cue, static tore through the comms, followed by a distress signal, not from the night squads, but from the compound.
"Mayday! Mayday! We're under attack!"
"Tick-tock," mused Alice.
Flynn tried to straighten, to speak, but nothing came out, the air whistling through his lungs as he fought for breath.
"Oh dear," said Alice. "He doesn't sound so good."
"Go!"
snapped Kate. Sorrow was the first to move, casting an unreadable look her way as they stepped into the elevator, followed by Jackson and Ani supporting Flynn, Emily providing cover in case the Malkai changed her mind. August was the last one to go, his jaw clenched, and Kate forced herself to look at him, even managed a grim smile, suddenly grateful that a hope didn't count as a lie. "I'll meet you back there," she said, before the doors shut. The jeep tore through the night. The distress signals kept coming in, filling the channel with panicked reports of a shadow and FTFs gone mad. August knew what it meant. The Chaos Eater was inside the compound.
Saru sped up as the voices on the comms gave way to static or gunfire. In the back seat, Henry lay sprawled out, and M said, "Stay with me," over and over while Jackson monitored Henry's vitals, and August put his head in his hands and closed his eyes and saw Kate, and the look on her face as he left her behind. And he told himself he didn't have a choice. But it was a lie. He always had a choice. Wasn't the point of being alive that you could choose? Kate chose. The words came from sorrow. The look on their face told him he'd been talking out loud. She chose to stay and fight. "Now," said the Sunai, "what are we going to do?" August straightened, because sorrow was right. Kate was fighting. Henry was fighting. It was their turn. His grip tightened on the violin. He didn't know how to stop the Chaos Eater, but he knew how to keep the FTFs from killing one another. They just had to get inside.
"When we get back to the compound," he said, "you and I will go in through the back. The night squads will stay on the strip."
"Like hell," muttered Harris from the back seat.
"That's an order," said August. "The compound is now a quarantine zone. Send it out on the comms. No one goes past the light grid. Use the jeeps to make a barrier and stop anything that comes out. Saru and I will handle the rest."
Sloan couldn't help himself. He wanted to enjoy the view. The alarms had cut off, but the power continued to flicker and dim as he ascended the stairs, the sounds of slaughter drawing nearer with every step. A body came crashing down the steps, its uniform torn as if by nails. Humans could be truly monstrous, he mused, stepping over the corpse. As he reached the compound's main level, he was struck by the sweet scent of fresh blood. It streaked the pale lobby floor and brushed the walls, rose from the bodies. Everywhere he looked, the living were at each other's throats. A man thrust a blade into another's gut, and a woman wrapped her hands around a young boy's neck. And Sloane moved among them like a ghost, unnoticed, their eyes fogged silver by the monster's hold. The shadow itself stood in the center of the lobby, growing solid as it fed on so much violence. And the Sunai, the FTF's only hope, were across the seam, attacking an empty tower. By the time they got here, it would be over. By the time they... The whistle of steel sang through the air, and Sloane turned just in time to dodge a blade as it slashed upward, slicing his shirt and grazing the skin beneath. He found himself face to face with a ghost. A ghost with a cloud of red curls and a ragged scar across her throat.
Ilsa.
The jeep rounded the compound and skidded to a halt, the rest of the convoy close behind. August and Saru lunged from the vehicle and onto the light strip. A back door stood ajar, propped open by the corpse of a soldier who'd obviously tried to escape and failed, a pattern of gunfire dappling his back. There was no time to tend the dead. August closed his eyes for an instant as he stepped over the body, and Saru's fingers tightened on their flute knife as they followed. Inside, the compound was in chaos. The power flickered, and in the unsteady light, August saw the corpses littering the hall, most of them in green and gray fatigues. An FTF was slumped on the ground, his back against the training hall doors, and August's chest lurched when he recognized warm brown eyes and an open face. Colin was bleeding. He couldn't tell where, but when he stepped closer, the boy's head drifted up, and he actually smiled.
"They're safe," he said. "I got the doors closed before,"
he coughed,
before they saw,
he trailed off, eyes drifting shut. And August went to check for a pulse, but Sorrow's hand was already on his shoulder, urging him up. They had to keep moving. Every second was a life. And he straightened just as a voice reached him from the lobby. A voice that reminded him of fevers and cold steel and falling. But it wasn't just the Maokai's voice. It was the single word he said.
"Ilsa."
August turned to sorrow.
"Get to the command center," he said. "Hit the intercom and start playing."
Understanding lit the Sunai's eyes, and they took off toward the stairs as August sprinted for the lobby, and his sister